We continue the shiur in Gemara. We were discussing last shiur the story of the Asara Harugei Malchus, 10 different rabbis who were captured by the Roman government and put to death because of the fact that they spread the study of Torah. Every one of them suffered a different type of horrible death. And one of the reasons given is that these 10 rabbis were the Gilgal of the brothers of Yosef HaTzadik, who had sold Yosef HaTzadik as a slave, and therefore they paid for it now with their lives, to make up for that act. We come now to the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradya, one of those 10. He was one of the greatest Tanoim that ever lived, and he too was captured by the Roman government because of the fact that he spread the study of Torah. The Gemara says first, what led to it was that his Rebbe, Rabbi Yossi ben Kismo, who was mentioned in the 6th chapter of Pirkei Avos, Yossi ben Kismo, you recall, was so great that he was once offered a fortune, a fabulous fortune by a stranger to settle in this stranger city. They wanted to have this great tzaddik in their city. Yossi ben Kismo said, if you gave me all the treasures in the world that existed, I will not live anywhere but in a place of Torah, which teaches us how difficult it is for a person, even if he is a graduate of a seminary, of a yeshiva, and he gets smicha, and he's asked to go out of town to a small town where there is no religion, where there is nothing prevalent as far as yeshivas or a minyan or a mikveh, how careful this person should be before he settles there. Of course, Rabbi Yossi ben Kismo had refused too. Yossi ben Kismo was the Rebbe of Chanina ben Tradya, and the Gemara says he became very ill, and Chanina ben Tradya went to visit the Vaka Chayla, his Rebbe. When he came there, Rabbi Yossi ben Kismo said to Rabbi Chanina ben Tradya, my son, I heard that you are teaching Torah publicly. Don't you realize that this nation, the Romans, are powerful? This is an empire that rules the world. Don't you realize that their power is due not to their greatness, not to their military strength, but to the will of Hashem? It is from heaven that they have been appointed, chosen, to conquer the entire globe, which means that you cannot do anything against them. You cannot rebel against them. They were chosen by Hashem to mete out punishment to those who deserve it. This is the nation that was chosen to destroy the house of Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh Kodeshim. This is the nation that killed countless numbers of tzaddikim in Eretz Yisrael, especially in Yerushalayim, the elders of Yerushalayim, the Chachamim, the women and children, pure children who never committed sins in their lives. The best of the Jews were destroyed, wiped out by this nation. And despite all this, we see that there is no vengeance from heaven, which means that it is the will of Hashem that they still remain. And I heard about you, that you have gone against their orders, against their decree. You assemble students and teach them Torah publicly. Now they have issued a decree, anyone who does this will receive a death penalty. Rabbi Chanina replied, you are right, but I say that heaven will have pity on me. The Yossi said to Rabbi Chanina, I told you words of logic. There's reason to what I said, and you tell me heaven will have pity. Therefore I say that I am positive you are going to die a horrible death. They are going to burn you alive with the Sefer Torah which you teach. This was a prediction, of course, which came true. But we notice one item. We're going to have something similar to this in the Sichei Saran. Avinu Zal once made this statement too. He said that there are countries, nations that are anti-Semitic. They issue anti-Semitic decrees. They declare pogroms against the Jews. They threaten with pogroms. And there are some Jews who say there's nothing to worry about because Hashem is kale, Rachum v'chanan, Hashem is kind, considerate, compassionate to His children, the Jewish people, and surely Hashem will never allow this to happen. Rabbi Nadal said these people are the worst Rishoim, the worst enemies of the Jews, because they are the ones that stop the Jews from going out into the street, going to the shuls, and crying, screaming out to Hashem, davening to Hashem with all their heart to void these decrees. In truth, we are not allowed to say Hashem is so kind that He will not allow this to happen. There are such gezeiros. The creation was made with Hashem, created good and created evil. And there is freedom on both sides. If there is a lot of evil, it's up to the good to combat this evil, not to sit back and say, we'll rely on heaven to take our part. You must combat this with good deeds, with tshuva, with tefillah, with tzedakah. Then the decree will become void. This is what Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma said to Rabbi Hanina. Can't sit back and say Hashem will have kindness and pity on you. Where was the kindness and pity when the others died? All the others taken before you. Therefore, since these words are illogical, I predict that you are going to die a worse death than the others. The Bechanina wasn't fazed by this, and he said, well, if I die, that's a very small loss, because the government can only destroy me physically. Every person must die eventually, but they cannot destroy my neshama, my soul, which is everlasting. And therefore, I ask you, my rabbi, tell me, you are so great a tzaddik, you know the future, what is my lot in Elon Haba, in the future world? Will I receive Gan Eden after I pass away? Yossi ben Kisma asked Michalina, it depends. Can you tell me any good deed that you have done recently? Chalina answered, well, I did something. I am the gabbai of tzedakah. I collect and distribute tzedakah. And one time, on Purim, very timely, on Purim, I had money of Purim. It's supposed to be given out to the poor. This money became intermingled with my own private funds. I didn't know the exact amount of which is mine and which is tzedakah, and so I gave the entire amount of tzedakah. Yes, he said, if that is the case, then I say I envy your lot. I would like to have your high level of Gan Eden in the future world. Exactly what was the exchange of words here? What was meant by these words? They're a little strange. Rabbi Hanina said to Rabbi Yossi, what is my lot in Elam Haba? Because I know, modestly speaking, I know that I am a person who spends his life in the study of Torah, learning and teaching. That's the biggest mitzvah possible. That possibly is enough to warrant me, to ensure me of receiving an Eden. But I don't know if that is enough, because perhaps you need, besides Torah, you have to have Gemilas Chasadim also. Person must do something physically for others. You've got to help the poor. You've got to help persons with money, with food, with physical consideration besides just the study of Torah alone. And that, I don't know if I've done enough. Yossi asked him, tell me something you have done in that field, and I will answer. After the reply to Bechanina about his giving tzedakah of his own money, Yossi said, that will surely ensure you of Gan Eden. Himar says that a short time later, Yossi ben Kisma was nistar. He passed away, and all of the gedolim, tzaddikim, went to attend the funeral. This funeral was so great, so largely attended, that even the leaders of the Romans, too, went to attend this funeral. It was one of the largest funerals in history. On the way back, returning from the cemetery, from the place of burial, they passed a group of people. These Roman leaders noticed this group, consisted of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradyan, with a sefer Torah in his hand, teaching his Talmidim. He was immediately arrested, taken into custody, brought to trial, and found guilty and sentenced to die. Death by burning at the stake, the fire. They took a sefer Torah, the sefer Torah he was learning with, and they wrapped this sefer Torah around him, tied strong ropes around both together, and then they set fire to him with the sefer Torah together, but in order to make sure that he dies a slow, painful death, they took wool, dipped this wool and cotton, in water, made it very wet, and placed this on him, that this saturated, this would slow down the process of burning. Normally, if there is fire, a person is consumed, Chas v'Shalom, very quickly. Here in this case, because of the opposite force, the dampness of this wool cloth, this slowed down the process of the fire so that he would feel the pain. It would prolong his death, the agony, that much longer. His daughter was compelled to stand by and watch this, together with all his students. Just as in the case of Rabbi Akiva too, they forced the students, their penalty was to stand by and watch the suffering and agony of their Rebbe. His daughter cried out, she said, "Father, how can I see you suffering this way? Why should I have to see you suffer? What happened to the greatness of the reward of Teda? Where is this reward? Teda, it says, is the greatest of all mitzvahs. Talmud Teda Keneged Kulam. Study of Teda is more than all the other mitzvahs combined. Is this your reward for all the Teda that you've learned, studied, and taught to others?" The Mechanina said, "What you want actually is revenge. That's what you're crying for. You want revenge for myself. You want revenge for the disgrace that is being placed upon the holiest of all items that exist. Well, I have consolation. If they would have burnt me alone, then it would have been difficult to tolerate, because there's always that thought that perhaps I'm suffering for nothing. My death will not be avenged. But now that I'm being burnt together with the Sefer Teda, then surely Hashem will seek vengeance for the Kedusha, the disgrace of the Teda. At the same time, he will avenge my death too." Now his Talmidim spoke up. They said to him just these words, "Rebbe," they said, "what do you see?" And this is explained to me, why do they ask, "what do you see?" Because they felt, they could sense, and they could hear strange sounds. What was happening then was that the Sefer Teda was being burnt, but you cannot burn that which is eternal. So the letters of the Teda could not be burned. They rose up and returned back to the one who gave them. They went back to heaven. It was only the parchment that was being burnt. The sounds of these letters rising heavenward could be heard by the Talmidim, but they could not see it. They couldn't understand these strange sounds. And two, they also felt that there must be something spiritual there in addition. They could sense the spirits, the angels who stood by in sadness watching this sight. The Mechanina replied, "What you hear, I see. I see the parchment of the Sefer Teda being burnt and the letters flying heavenward. And therefore, do not worry about the Sefer Teda being desecrated. It's only the parchment. The letters themselves can never be destroyed." Now the Talmidim said to Rabbi Chaim ben Tzadian, "We cannot bear any longer watching you suffer. There's no alternative, there's no solution but death itself. Death is the one thing that will save you from suffering. Why don't you assist death in coming to you? All you have to do is open your mouth and breathe in the fumes of this fire, the poisonous fumes, and you'll die instantly or very shortly instead of suffering so long." Mechanina replied, "I will not take my own life regardless of what degree of torture I suffer. The one that gave me my neshama, let him be the one to take my neshama. I will not destroy myself." Now, what about the actual din in a case like this? The Gemara says, what if a person is suffering? Is he allowed to commit suicide? Let us say a person, Chas v'Shalom, suffering terminal cancer, which is so painful that there is no drug that can subdue or deaden the pain. Is he permitted to take his life? The answer is that even in a case like that, a person may not commit suicide. He is forced to suffer, Chas v'Shalom. However, if there is a case, a question, of a person being tortured to prevent him from obeying the mitzvahs of the Torah, prevent him from carrying out the laws, command of Hashem, then he is permitted to commit suicide to save himself from that. We find that to be the case in the story of the death of Shaul HaMelech. When Shaul HaMelech was struck on the battlefield, the last day of his life, he took his sword and stuck it into the ground, the handle, and fell forward on the sharp blade to kill himself. You recall, he did not succeed in this until a Amaleki came by and completed the task. A young Amaleki, tribe Amalek, killed King Shaul. But he did attempt to take his own life. Gemara says, how could he do that? The answer was, he knew that the Philistines would desecrate his body. It would be a prize catch, and they would torture him to deprive him or to remove him from his royal state and from his loyalty to his religion. In order to avoid that, he was permitted to commit suicide. The Ritva, one of the Rishonim, says, we find in Jewish history in the past a very sad, dark history that the Jews have throughout the ages. Different eras, different centuries, always the Jews were downtrodden, the Jews were persecuted. Stories that are so horrible, atrocities of the past, that parallel the stories that occurred in our time, the hands of the Nazis. And there were times that Dvorzal says that the nations then, every nation of course, at one time or another was guilty of this powerful, unreasonable hatred, anti-Semitism, a desire to devour, to destroy, to annihilate the Jew for no logical reason whatsoever. It's gzeida without tzachik, illogical, unreasonable, and yet there is this animalistic instinct in the heart of a goyim, the evil, malicious act, where every nation tries its best, despite the fact that all others before have failed, each one takes up a cudgel and tries to be the one to succeed in wiping out the Jews. We see that, Rahman al-Islam, today, United Nations, they are the most divided body ever, in every single item, except one. To a hatred against Israel and the Jewish people, then they are completely united. And of course, these United Nations, it's 70 basic nations, the Gemara says, are like 70 wolves against one little lamb, sheep. All their efforts, they will still fail as they have always failed, because they don't realize the power, not of the sheep, this lamb, the Jews, but they don't realize the power of the shepherd. Hashem is the shepherd, the Almighty Shepherd, who will never let this lamb fall victim to these evil nations. And so, despite this, in all generations we have these persecutions. And the Ritva says there were cases when the nation at that time in question threatened to convert forcefully all children living in their boundaries, within their borders. The chief rabbis then, these were certain countries or cities in Europe, the chief rabbis of that country assembled, discussed the issue, and decided that the solution was to actually slaughter all the children alive then, to rescue them from this threat of conversion. The order was given out. The rabbis themselves performed this frightful act of having to slaughter to shecht their own children. This was done, and this was done after due deliberation, the legal point, the halacha point. Of course, the Dvorzal says this was perfectly legal, committing suicide or murder to save a Jew, to save the soul of a Jew. It is permissible to destroy the body of the Jew. These sad cases were legal, and therefore, Rabbi Chanina ben Tadya now said that despite the fact they are trying to destroy my soul also, I will not surrender my soul to them, so it's only my body that is being threatened. Therefore, he said, I have no right to commit suicide. Let Hashem take my soul, my life from me. I will suffer any torture they can mete out. Gemara says now there was a Roman officer who stood by. Somehow there's always one, even among goyim, there's one chassid, chassidei umas olam. You will find a guy, very rarely of course, this is one in millions, a guy who has a good nekuda, a spark of goodness in his heart, spark of faith. This is the type of goy who eventually converts. So there are some goyim who have this goodness in their heart. This goodness comes to the fore, it surfaces at a time of emergency. This was the case with this Jewish officer, who witnessed this and recognized the kedusha of a Jew, seeing the act of the Bechanina Mitzrayim. So he said to the Bechanina, I believe now. Now I have complete faith in the kedusha, the holiness, and the eternal power of the Jew. Eternal power meaning that the real power of the Jew is in the afterworld. There are two worlds. There's this very temporary bitter world, which apparently has been given by heaven to the goyim to rule over. And for the Jews, there remains the eternal, everlasting world of Gan Eden. I want to be part of that world. I want to make a deal with you. If I will do something to hasten your death, to remove the means that are torturing you, if I remove these wet rags and place instead dry straw upon you, you'll die instantly. Your torture will end. But I'll do this if you guarantee me, and your guarantee I will accept your word, you guarantee me Gan Eden, and I will have Gan Eden after I pass away. Of course, this shows his emunah in the tzaddik emes. Why would a goy who lived all his life as a goy, never performed the mitzvah in his life, probably was evil to even to Jews prior to this also, why for one single act of what? Of killing a tzaddik, seeing that a tzaddik dies quickly, with this one act he should go to Gan Eden immediately and be spared all the Gehenim that any evil person deserves, because of this one act. The answer is that the yesod, the foundation of all the mitzvahs in the Torah, is emunah, faith. One who shows a true, sincere, solid degree of faith, it is as though he has performed all the mitzvahs in the Torah. And by this act, he can have his sins erased. Not enough, of course, by himself, but he was wise in selecting the protection, promise, assurance, the insurance given by the greatest insurance company then, by the Tzaddik Emes himself. Rabbi Yechlina agreed to this. This officer removed the wet cloth quickly, placed on the Bechlina dry straw, the flames shot upwards, and this officer leaped into the flames. And it took only seconds, a matter of seconds, or a second. There was a mighty roar, and then a soft voice. A voice came from heaven and said, Rabbi Chanina and this officer have both just now entered into Gan Eden. At this voice, later, Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, cried. He wept at the sound of this voice. He said, note that there are people who are good Jews, well-meaning Jews, who work so hard during their lifetime to serve Hashem. They make so many sacrifices, they show such devotion. They live a full life, 70 years, and they barely are able to get to Gan Eden, first having to go through the horrors of the heavenly court, suffering to remove their sins, finally make Gan Eden. Here you have a person who in one single moment, a moment could be a second, a minute or less, can acquire for himself Gan Eden with such speed that he evaded even a trial in heaven, entered immediately into Gan Eden. Of course, Debbie meant to point out not that he begrudged this officer the zechus. He pointed out to others, note how you work hard. Know how to work. Know that when you work by yourself, you accomplish little. But when you attach yourself to a tzaddik, to the tzaddik emes, how much more effective are your mitzvahs? If one single mitzvah is enough to gain this office of this goy eternity in the world to come, imagine what a person can accomplish with many mitzvahs if he is bound that tightly, that firmly, that securely with faith to the tzaddik emes. The Gemara now goes on to give us the sequel to this story. The mayor was one of the two greatest talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was also 10th of those rabbis who had died at the hands of the Roman king. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 talmidim who died prior to this, prior to his own death. because they showed very little consideration for each other, and they were destroyed by a plague from heaven. Then Rabbi Akiva acquired a small number of new students. These new students brought a new light to the world. His two greatest Talmidim were Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon ben Yechoi Zal. Shimon Yechoi Zal was the light of the world, the Zohar HaKadosh. Rabbi Meir was also a light. The word Rabbi Meir, Meir means to give light. His name was not Rabbi Meir. He was called Rabbi Meir because he was Meir Enei Chachamim. He enlightened the eyes of the wise, the great Chachamim of his generation, through the greatness of his Torah. He was also known from the following story as Rabbi Meir Bal Hanes, Rabbi Meir, the master of miracles. Rabbi Meir was married to Beruria. Rabbi Meir's wife, Beruria, was very famous, extremely famous in her time, for all time, because she too was so learned that the Meir's Talmidim, among whom were numbered the greatest of all the rabbis in the Gemara, the Meir's Talmidim were subservient to Beruria. They had to come to Beruria to answer, to solve some of their problems. The Gemara tells that many deep problems in the Gemara were solved by Beruria, a woman who knew more Torah than the great rabbis of that era. How did Beruria learn so much Torah? Was that Meir her teacher? Was she learned only after she married that Meir? The answer is she was that learned because she had an illustrious father. Her father was Rabbi Hanina ben Tadyan, this one who had spread the study of Torah to others. And whenever he taught, she would sit by, naturally behind a very powerful mechitza, where the students could not see her. She would listen intently, and she would absorb with a thirst the words of Torah. This craving for knowledge was such, she had this sharpness of mind inherited from her great father. Therefore, she was able to match and be superior to the vast majority of great Tanoim, greatest rabbis of all time. Now, she, of course, was the sister of Rabbi Hanina's daughter. You recall, we mentioned in the last shiur, that when Rabbi Hanina was caught by the Roman government, the Romans meted out sentences to Rabbi Hanina ben Tadyan. His sentence was he should die by burning, his wife should be killed by the sword, and his daughter should be placed in a base zonis, a house of women, of illicit women. Rabbi Hanina's wife was killed, his daughter was placed into this base zonis. Beruria spoke to her husband, the mayor, and she said, I cannot bear the thought of my sister having to suffer in this place of tumult. You must do something to rescue her. Amaya said, I will if she deserves being rescued. In other words, she is there now, and if she has passed the test, if she has not committed any kind of sin that is done by those women, then I'll do my best to save her or bring her out. The mayor took along a sack of gold coins, which was a great amount of wealth. He went to this place, this base of Zainus. He walked in disguise and said to the keeper of these women, I want to visit the women here. Let me select one of my choice. Of course, that's whatever business is done there. This presumably is allowed for those who show enough money. The mayor approached the daughter of Rabbi Hanina ben Tadyan, his wife's sister. She had no idea who he was. He was completely disguised. And he presented himself to her and asked her to have relations with him. And she stood back and said, she hesitated and said, you don't want me. Get someone else because right now I am impure. I'm not physically pure. There's a period when I cannot be of any service to you. So please go to someone else. Amaya said to her, fine, I want just you, and if it's a matter of a couple of days, I'm going to stay here and wait. I'll be in the neighborhood, I'll wait for you. She began to plead and said to him, no, find someone else. I am not worth having because I will not be able to satisfy you. And her pleading was so intense, Amaya recognized the fact that she had avoided any physical contamination. In that case, then he said, you deserve to be rescued. I am your sister's husband. He went to the keeper of this place, and he said to him, I want to redeem, to ransom this woman. The keeper said, I have orders from the Roman government that if I release any one of these women, then I will be hung. Death penalty. The mayor said to him, fine, then do this. I offer you this sack of, actually it was 3 measures filled with gold coins. There is enough wealth here for a king's ransom. You can retire on this wealth. Now use half of this sack of gold coins to bribe the officers who come. Each time they come and ask for this woman, bribe them. And every person goes for a bribe. The other half you keep for yourself. This keeper said to the mayor, what happens when, you know what a bribe is? Blackmail. You give them a bribe, they come back for more. They'll keep coming back. What happens when the supply of money is exhausted? What happens then? The mayor said to him, then when that happens, I will give you something better than gold. I will give you 3 words. And these 3 words will make you immune to any kind of suffering or punishment. Amazing. This man said, what are these 3 magic words? The mayor said, just say these 3 words. Eloko, the mayor, Anini. Hashem, Av, the mayor, answer me. So the man left and said, these 3 words will save me from the Roman soldiers, will save me from the gallows. The mayor said, well, why don't you test it? So he said, how do we test it now? How can we take a chance? Risk death just testing it? The mayor said, if you don't want to, I'll do it for you. He picked up a lump of earth, and there were a group of wild man-eating dogs. The mayor threw this lump at the dogs and came charging at this keeper. The mayor ducked behind a wall. This keeper stood there petrified as these dogs came at him with their fangs bared. He was looking in the face of black death. As they came close to him, in desperation, he cried out, Eloko, the mayor, Anini. As though there was a solid brick wall stopping them, the dogs stood dead in their tracks and retreated. The man saw this, he said, have I got a powerful weapon now? This is a deal. Take the woman, she's yours. The mayor took his sister-in-law out, he saved her, went home, thinking that this episode was over with. However, the Gemara says that the officers came to this keeper, they asked for this woman, especially because she was that famous, the daughter of the Bechanina Mentranya. And he said to them, I released her, but I have some gold coins, we'll share it. And they said, fine. They took the gold coins, they went out, they drank, used it up. What does a guy do with gold coins? Changes gold coins to a gold drink. And the supply of drink and money was used up. They came back to this keeper and said, we decided that we want more. If not, of course, then you'll pay the penalty. And of course, in a short time, this entire supply of money was exhausted, and then they said, no money, and you must die. He was reported, they brought him to court, the highest Roman court, where they deal with cases of death penalties. He was found guilty. They asked him why he did it, he refused to reply, and they sentenced him to death. He was sent to the gallows. They placed him on this position, placed the rope around his neck, and released him. He went down, the rope broke. This was a rope that could hold an ox. It was very strange. It was a pure sign of a miracle. Because as they placed the rope around his neck, he cried out, and called the man on any. The rope broke. So they said to him, something is strange. We want you to confess what was the secret of being saved. These magic words you used that saved your life, where did you get them? What are they? And of course, he could not stop their torturing him to get to divulge this information, so he revealed the whole story to them. They sent out an APB to bring in a mayor for trial. Trial, of course, meant death. So they placed a bulletin with his picture and all the post offices wanted at the gates, the gate of the city. They placed his picture. Apparently they had pictures in those days too. And those must have been drawings that were perfect. They had better artists than today. And the mayor, of course, was being sought by everyone. They had a large army of soldiers and police, secret police, went out to find the man. So he was forced to flee. One day, he was seen. They began to chase him, and he fled. He ran from them. He saw he couldn't get away, so he ran into a home of Zionists. The Gemara says that there he escaped. How? Because they're in the middle of eating. He sat down at the table. They were eating tray for food. And when they walked, the soldiers ran in, they saw him there. They saw him eating his tray for food, so they said, this is not the person we are looking for. A mayor will not eat tray for food under any conditions. The Gemara says, would he really eat it? The Gemara says, no. The way they ate there was, sort of a pudding, where these people then were very uncouth. They would dip their finger into it and lick their fingers. So he dipped the first finger in and licked the second finger. He kept on repeating that. It looked like he was eating it. This way, he fooled them. The Gemara says this was not sufficient because they watched him. Finally, one of the women, one of the very enticing women, sat down on his lap, began to hug him. This was not a woman, it was a mirage. This was Eliyahu HaNavi who came down in the form of this woman. And this way, they said this could not be that man because he would never commit an act like this. And so they left him. He was forced, for this reason, to flee the country. The mayor was forced to go into exile to Bavel. There he stayed for the rest of his life. Gemara says that the reason for leaving Eretz Yisrael, where he had spent his entire lifetime teaching Torah, spreading the knowledge of Torah, where he was so famous as Rabbi Meir, ended in this forced exile. He left Eretz Yisrael and went to Bavel, and there the remainder, the short period of his life was spent in Bavel until he finally was nostalgic. Of course, the idea of passing away outside of Eretz Yisrael was very alien to his feelings. Gemara says that there's a big mitzvah to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, but that mitzvah is questionable if a person dies outside of Eretz Yisrael. But Tavoyu Tamuis Artsi, the pasuk says you left your soul. You return your soul to heaven in the land of Tuma, and your body you sent to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's the wrong way to die. Proper way is to give forth your soul, to return the soul in Eretz Yisrael. Ashrei to those who pass away in Eretz Yisrael. They return both soul, and then the body is entitled to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. The Yerushalmi tells us that the mayor, in order to provide at least or as much, as close as possible to being zechut to pass away in Eretz Yisrael, though he was in Chutz Lodetz, he was on the other side of the river that bordered Eretz Yisrael. It came time to pass away. He entered into a boat, sort of, and there he instructed the people of Bavel to notify, after his passing, to notify the people of Eretz Yisrael, his Talmid, that he passed away, they should come and get his body and bury him in Eretz Yisrael. Passing away the boat meant that since the waters surrounding Eretz Yisrael are considered to a degree in Halacha as part of Eretz Yisrael, it meant that he was nostalgic to a degree in Eretz Yisrael, legally in a sense. When he did pass away, they came to receive his coffin. He was brought to Eretz Yisrael. He was buried with naturally the greatest honors possible. The Rizal, the Riyak Kodesh, says that he saw his grave. He saw through the grave. He saw that a mayor, being so great, was buried in a vertical position, unique because it showed he was the mayor, the light, that extended from earth to heaven. This was his greatness. And of course, another reason why he was forced to flee to Asia, another reason why he was buried in this manner, and that is in the subsequent Shir, Mitz Hashem. We should be zechut to fulfill the mitzvah of solid, perfect emunah in the Tzadik Emes.